Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to Atlanta, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you. Nittany Lion football team this morning was over at the Dome, and Jack Ham and I were there for that, working out. This was the last, quote, Wednesday practice of the season, so the last real full get-together. Tomorrow will be a walkthrough, and then Fast Friday comes up, and then the game on Saturday, which will be at noon, and we're on beginning at 10:30. Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Keep those warranties in mind. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a terrific service department that takes care of everything. They're always looking for new technicians. You're looking for a job in the new year, 2024 coming up. Want to change something up? Get with the pros. They're great. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. A lot going on today's show, including Bob Nightingale from USA Today, who's going to join us, talk a little bit of baseball. We're going to talk with Greg Murphy with some Phillies baseball tomorrow as well. And as the week goes, Gary Stokin, the CEO and president of the Peach Bowl, is going to join us. We have Wes Durham's going to be on with us. We've got a lot going on. And David Callum, the play-by-play voice of Ole Miss, is going to join us on the show as well. So we have a lot going on this week as we're making that transition during this holiday week. A lot of people have the week off. With all the bowl games going on. And Saturday, of course, the Peach Bowl, Penn State and Ole Miss at noon. We're on beginning at 10:30. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back to Atlanta. Great to have you with us as Penn State gets ready for the Peach Bowl. Players have the rest of the day off today. They practice this morning at 10 o'clock. Over at the Dome. Everything's indoors the rest of the week. No more outdoor practices. They'll go in for a walkthrough tomorrow and then inside the Dome, and then Fast Friday will be inside the Dome. Ole Miss gets the practice this afternoon. They're in there at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So that's what's going on down here. Now, of course, down here, the Atlanta Braves are really important. Really important. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, all with great warranties, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, and a terrific service department. Whether it's routine or difficult, they handle it all. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online, sunburymotors.com. I mentioned the Atlanta Braves, so let's talk some baseball now with Bob Nightingale from USA Today. And happy holidays, Bob, to you and your great family. Welcome back.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, so for some odd reason, we'll start with Shohei Ohtani and the deferred money. How important is that as to how it's structured, not just for him, but also for the Dodgers?
Well, for the Dodgers, instead of paying, you know, $70 million a year in taxes, it's only come down to $46 million a year. So it saves them $24 million because of the deferred. And for Ohtani, you know, it's kind of like a stroke of genius, really, because he's only making $2 million a year for 10 years. So when his deferred starts kicking in 10 years, you know, he'll probably move outside of California. So he's going to save himself 14% in taxes, or at least be greatly reduced from wherever he moves to.
And I don't think people realize this, in part because of a lot of deals that he has in Japan and so forth. I mean, his outside endorsement money is about $45 million a year, or at least in that neighborhood, I believe.
Yeah, you're right. He made 40 last year. Probably go up his agency says it'll probably go up about $10 million. So you're talking about a guy making $15 million a year off the field. I mean, no one comes close to that. Number two in baseball is Mike Trout at $5 million. I don't think anybody, I don't care if it's Jeter or whoever, I don't think anybody ever made more than $10 million a year off the field. You just don't get those kind of endorsement monies for baseball.
Right, no, this is LeBron pro golf. Mickelson and Woods made all that money off the golf course. This is equivalent to that. Okay, so now with the Soto move to the Yankees and the Ohtani move to the Dodgers, how do you now view the current landscape of baseball?
Well, I mean, Dodgers still need pitching. I mean, J.D. Martinez, he was fine for them last year. I mean, he wasn't hitting, 44 home runs, but he was still a solid DH. They need pitching badly. I mean, that's what killed them in the playoffs and down the stretch. So, yeah, they're going to be hard after Yamamoto. If they don't get him, probably Blake Snell, maybe trade for Dylan Cease. But they got to come up with at least two starters. I think he goes to New York with the Yankees or the Mets. I'm not going to rule out the Dodgers, but just, he wants the bright lights. He wants all the star power. It's kind of the opposite of Ohtani. He wants that attention.
So let's talk about Yamamoto. What makes Yamamoto a special pitcher, and how high can the bidding go for him?
Well, just the fact he's 25 years old, won their version of, of two Cy Youngs. Granted, competition over there isn't like it is, over here. I think there's only about 8 or 10, really major league quality top of hitters over there. So, but yeah, the people love the age factor. That's the big thing. And I think the bidding's going to go over 300, Steve. I was told, you're not going to get in under 300. The thing originally, people thought 200, but it's gotten sky high. There's no pitching available. And to have this guy that young is a big coup for whoever gets him.
Soto goes to the Yankees. How did you feel about the return San Diego got for him?
I thought the Padres did very well.
Agreed.
For the return. I mean, it's like maybe, 70 cents on the dollar compared to what they got, gave up to get him originally from Washington. So I like the return a lot. They had no choice but to deal him. They have to get their payroll down. And for the Yankees, they need a left-handed bat. I think the big thing for the Yankees, they got to get him to swing the bat. He takes way too many walks. Too many times he's caught, looking at a called third strike. So I think the big thing for him is, drive in some runs, hit some home runs, take advantage of that short porch.
Right, exactly. Aaron Nola, the Phillies didn't make a lot of big moves, but they re-signed Nola. What did it mean that they were able to keep a homegrown kid?
Yeah, they were kind of ambivalent for a while whether they're going to keep him. I mean, during the spring training, he went over $200 million. They said no. Season ended. He's still talking about that. And they were prepared to go hard after Yamamoto. That was their second choice. And then he kind of made it, you know what? I'll drop my price tag. I really want to play here. And I think the fact that he kept emphasizing to ownership in the front office how badly you want to play in Philly, they said, let's make it happen. So both sides did that compromise. That's a fair contract.
Okay. Now I want to talk to you about something I talk to with my broadcasting class all the time. I teach one each semester at Penn State, and I tell them the same thing over and over again. I'd rather have you be second and right than first and wrong. Was the Ohtani situation, without getting into names, was the Ohtani situation a good example of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was embarrassing to the profession, to tell you the truth. I mean, to be that, that wrong, too many people were wrong, and on a name that big, you've got to be ultra, ultra careful. I remember when they, during the week, I think Tuesday or Wednesday, found out that, the Dodgers called Joe Kelly on vacation in Hawaii. And said, "Hey, have you changed your number for Ohtani?" And said, "That's interesting. I mean, to me, that means Ohtani's going there. I didn't write that it's going there. I just said it may mean everything, may mean nothing. But here's what happened. Just kind of stick to the facts. In the case on Friday, I wake up and someone had reported that a decision was imminent. So you check with his agency. no, the decision is not imminent. And then next thing you know, he's on a flight to Toronto. Private plane's leaving at 9 in the morning. Well, he sold his pajamas in Orange County, so he's not on that flight. And then, you know, early afternoon, some reports he's signed with the Blue Jays. You know, quickly the agency says, no decision's been made. Yeah, later on in the afternoon, you know, another report is, the plane's about to land. You know, let's see when it gets off. People are, you know, watching this thing in real time. And finally, they say, you know, he's not, you know, he never boarded a flight. He's not in Toronto. This stuff is just wrong. But yeah, it was for baseball writers, it was a very embarrassing day.
How long in reality has it taken for you to gain the trust of sources? And what happens? I know it's not you personally, but what happens in the profession when people skirt and start throwing stuff out there when legitimate guys such as yourself have worked so hard to cultivate the right people?
Well, when you're wrong like this, you lose all credibility. You know, there's a fan site in L.A. You know, no matter what they do, they could break the next 20 stories. They're going to be reminded of this, like the Aaron Judge thing a year ago. You know, people still bring that up with Aaron Judge, Arson Judge, and all that. And so, you got to be very careful. I mean, it just takes time, to develop sources and to trust them. And you got to make sure too that okay. Just because this guy says it, you know, unless he's the owner of the team or the GM of the team, you know, you better make sure he's 100% right. You better double check that too. And I think too often in our profession, you know, that the agents are, you know, running everything. Probably 95% of these stories are broken by agents or leaked by agents. And you got to make sure these agents aren't using guys too.
Well, in fact, I think the last time I had you on, we talked about the Scott Boras press conference. because, let's face it, that's where a lot of news is made if he's out there talking about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of the prime guys. And, the bottom line, too, with the way it's structured these days, a team isn't legally allowed to say they're not in it. And so, I mean, I made a point in my column on Sunday. You know, I could have said the Kansas City Royals are the number one suitor for Ohtani, and they won't be outbid, even though it's 100% wrong. Legally, the Royals cannot come out and publicly deny it. That's just part of the collective bargaining agreement. Like, you're allowed to say you're in a player. You can't say you're out of a player. You can't say what you offered, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But again, that's what I tell my class all the time. I said, I want you to be second. I'd rather have you be second and right than first and wrong, because we're in a hot take world. Hot takes.
Yeah, it's like I heard, he signed with the Dodgers on that Saturday. And it's like, well, let me double check here. Let me double check with the agency. I'm not going to be wrong. So, everybody had the same thing in a matter of, 30 seconds, 60 seconds. But you just can't take that chance.
What did you think about the moves the Atlanta Braves made?
I love with the moves that, they always make. Be interested to see what else they do. They were in on Nola. They would love to have him. They had interest in Sonny Gray, too. I think they're going to be big on Dylan Cease, make a run for him.
Yeah.
But they grab guys, and guys love playing there so much. It's easy to get those guys to sign extensions.
So I'm down in Orlando doing Penn State basketball. And turned out Dave O'Brien, who does the Red Sox, was there. And I said, so Dave, what do you think of Breslow so far? And he looks at me and he says, geez, Steve, I don't know. He says, we're all kind of waiting to see what move he's going to make. What kind of moves can he make in Boston right now? And does he have the freedom from ownership to do it?
Well, that's a big thing. I mean, Dave Dombrowski, made his moves and won a World Series. He's fired the next fall because they don't like his farm system. Well, how do you get, great players by trading guys from the farm system? Then the last guy, Chaim Bloom, he's not spending money. He traded away Mookie Betts. He didn't want to trade away Mookie Betts. Yeah, should have gotten more back, sure. But he didn't want to trade Betts. And same thing here. I mean, I don't think there's any way in the world Yamamoto's going to Boston Red Sox. He wants the bright lights. They're ways away, I think, from being that power again. I think they're going to kind of operate like the Mets are. Yeah, the Mets are in Yamamoto, but they're not doing anything stupid. They're kind of building for the future. That's why I kind of wonder what's going to go on with Pete Alonso. If they were going to sign him, they would have signed him already. So I get the feeling that, quietly, he's certainly available in trades, maybe not now, but maybe this summer.
We saw the money, obviously, Ohtani got. That's a separate issue. How do you feel they are financially now in baseball, 2 years removed from the collective bargaining agreement? Do these things usually settle down monetarily, or do you see continued increases?
No, it's usually right afterwards. Yeah. It's huge.
Yep.
Everybody's throwing money around. Then kind of slowly fades as it gets closer to the CBA expiration. So, no, I think it slows down. You know, we'll see. I mean, obviously, Bellinger's asking about $250 million. I don't see him getting that. You know, the Blake Snell is going to try to piggyback off Yamamoto, who's going to get over $300. You know, he's not going to get Yamamoto money. But, yeah, for a few cases like this, guys will make out. But you watch. There's going to be some guys, you know, left standing around when spring training rolls around, and they outprice themselves and going to have to take whatever's there.
What's more interesting to you, covering the season or covering the off season?
Well, I like the season better. I mean, off season, you know, like we talked about, there's so many rumors and stuff like that. And, you know, Ohtani was interesting. I actually appreciate the way it was handled, where there's no leaks, nothing like that. Nobody was lying about things. Just very quiet. So, but there's not too many, you know, guys like Ohtani, you know, Judge a year ago, where you kind of get excited about. So, I like the regular season. I mean, to me, in the times of the year, the most fun time of year by far to me is the playoffs. I love the postseason, knowing every game means everything. Second's probably spring training, just a relaxed time. New guys show up. Everybody goes to camp where the new guys are. Everybody's got filled with optimism. And then the regular season is probably third. You know, you don't get really excited, you know, really until September, you know, the pennant race, just because it's such a long, long year. Last year, you know, there really wasn't that one compelling story. You know, Ohtani for a while, but it wasn't like Judge of 2 years ago going for the American League home run record or something like that.
Yeah, see, I'm still always about the games. You know, now part of it is not looking at what I do because I broadcast Penn State football and Penn State basketball. And yes, I do minor league baseball in the summer as well. To me, it's always about the games. And then the stories are nice beyond it. But see, that's how everybody's wired differently. That's just me. I just rather the games.
Yeah, it's fun just to say, when you talk to managers, they say their favorite time of day is just, you know, the first pitch. Yeah. You know, all the rest they could have as far as meeting with the media, taking care of business, headaches. But just, you know, during the game, everybody can just focus simply on that. There's not another distraction out there.
Bob, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate the perspective on a wide variety of topics today. And really appreciate you.
Sure, my pleasure. Have a happy holiday, Steve.
Happy holidays, Bob. Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Bill Bender coming up in the next half hour from Sporting News. Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a great service department that backs it all up every step of the way, routine and difficult. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to Atlanta. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, let's bring in Bill Bender, Sporting News. Bill, welcome back. How you been?
Good to talk to you. Where do you want to go?
Well, okay, the obvious starting place will be the playoff and how it ended up playing out. What did you think in the end about both the selections and the explanation of the process?
Well, they got it wrong from a strictly, you know, heart of competition, the way the structure is, you know, you're trying to cram five people into four chairs so somebody has to sit on the floor. And the way that they did it, so they got it wrong. I'll be clear about that for all the Florida State fans out there.
Yep.
But the easiest route in terms of the blowback they would get back. I think they would end up getting more blowback from the SEC had Alabama been left out, and even more blowback from the state of Texas, who beat Alabama in the regular season. Then, and we'd be wondering what the value of this regular season is that we cling on to so hard with college football, if that makes sense.
No, and I understand. Look, I think if they were so concerned about Jordan Travis not playing, why wouldn't they drop down to fifth the week after he got hurt? Why'd they wait till now?
Right. And that's the worst part of it, is it's really, we can dance around it all we want, but they pin this on a kid that got hurt. Mm-hmm. And the entire nature of the Florida State season changed when Jordan Travis fractured his ankle, and he became kind of he's basically the reason why. And I hate that, because he's a kid. It's not like Jordan Travis planned to fracture his ankle against North Alabama. And you raise a great point. If they were going to drop him, why didn't they do it after that North Alabama game? Why did they not do it after the offense looked just okay against Florida? They waited until the absolute last minute. And something, Steve, I'll say this. After the Big Ten championship game, when Urban Meyer said they can't take Alabama without taking Texas, that's when it kind of dawned on me that's probably what the committee's going to do.
Right. Well, exactly. They had no choice. Texas went to Tuscaloosa and won by double digits. You could not justify Alabama in and Texas out just on the fact that something on the field had to count for something.
Right, and that's the other end of it. Like, they could have hedged, and kind of what I was going with was I didn't think there was a chance Alabama would be left out, because it's SEC, it's Greg Sankey. It's, if you watch those five conference championship games, I think most sane college football fans would agree that the Georgia-Alabama game was the best of the five.
Yep.
In terms of what you saw in terms of the product. And I just didn't see a way. But by the setup and the structure, if we were being fair about it, then Alabama should have been left out. And I say that knowing that I'm probably going to pick Alabama to win the national championship.
Right, right. Well, no, they went from 8. I think they entered at 8, right? They went from 8 to 4. Georgia fell from 1 to 6 when it was all said and done. And they don't have to look far for blame, because the ACC commissioner, Jim Phillips, along with Kevin Warren and George Kliavkov, you and I both know when the, quote, alliance was put together, they put the brakes on the 12-team playoff, which everybody thought was going to start this year.
Yeah, and so there's a little bit of that. And then there's a little bit of, we got into kind of a spirited debate in one of our editorial meetings with another good friend of both of ours, Mike DeCourcy. And what's stopping them from splitting a national championship if Florida State somehow beats Georgia? Now, Georgia may have a bunch of opt-outs, and Florida State won't have Jordan Travis, and they won't have Johnny Wilson. He opted out, but what's stopping the school from doing that? You know, and here we are, 2023, and we've gone through the pool era and the BCS and now the 14 playoff era. And I keep cautioning college football fans that if you think the controversy and the cronyism and those kind of things are going to go away just because we're going to 12, I think you're going to be disappointed.
You're going to be very – you and I, Billy, you and I both know they're all going to be very disappointed, because it's been there – Dave Revson, mutual friend of ours, wrote a book about the roots of college football starting in the late 1880s. When you read it, not much has changed. It's just a different era with no face masks.
Right, and they weren't dealing with, you know, like the Spanish flu and those kind of things, although we did have to get through COVID.
Yeah.
It really hasn't. And Dave, I've read that book, and it's just some of the political backdrop of this sport. And one of the dangerous precedents that was sent, it's not the one that you think. It's not the, oh, they're going to leave unbeaten teams out. No, they're just going to treat every other conference that isn't the SEC or the Big Ten. They won't be treated equally. But I mean, not even close. I think when Greg Sankey went on game day and used the Sesame Street comparison. That was kind of a statement daring the committee to leave us. He was basically daring them to leave him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And look, in the end, it's going to be the top five champions and seven at-large. And of the seven at-large, geez, Bill, I wouldn't doubt that the vast majority of the time of the seven, it's going to be a combination of SEC Big Ten teams, and nobody's going to get more than one.
Right.
That's what I think.
It's definitely going to be like that. And the SEC and the Big Ten will control the narrative. You saw this proposed legislation from Charlie Baker about moving it to what? Another subdivision, which would be the high-rent college football program, so to speak. Penn State would be in that in that group.
Sure.
But Mike and I have kind of been going back and forth on this. I think that's where we're headed. I don't know what the time frame is, but the more we're pushing with NIL, portal, other programs having trouble keeping up, they're going to put those high-rent programs in a division by themselves. I can see it. It would take a long time. It's not going to happen overnight, but I still think we're headed in that direction.
Let's see. Now, this is how Bill and I roll, because he already anticipated my next topic and question before I even got to it. He knew I was going to go this direction. This, to me, this is the NCAA trying to still keep its toe in the big football pool by coming up with this proposal to give that level of autonomy. So at least there's still the NCAA still in the ball game. Do you feel the same way?
Yes, I think you're dead on, because I've used this comparison. I'm a big high school football guy, and I know you guys love your high school football in PA. We love it in Ohio. And there's a reason why there's seven divisions, because the high-end schools, the Lakewood St. Edwards and the Medinas and Mentors, where Drew Aller played up there.
Yep,
he'll tell you it's a little bit different than playing a D4 school. Just like, as much as we hate to admit it, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, even within the Big Ten, you could make a strong argument that, I tell my Ohio State buddies this all the time, so you really only have three games on your schedule that you can actually lose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, maybe that changes with a different coach, maybe not. I mean, this has been going on for about 30 years at Ohio State,
right,
and 30 years at Penn State and Michigan. You get the wrong coach, it can go south, but that's why I think it would make sense in some ways. Now, getting through how much money the conferences, the TV networks, all those things make, I understand that. But to your point, this is the NCAA's way of still having some, because they could theoretically go off and do their own thing if they wanted.
Absolutely they could. And then there would be a question, and this is where Mike DeCourcy would come in. Say they went off on their own, what would they do with the NCAA tournament, which is the sole moneymaker for the entire enterprise?
Yeah, the basketball side of it is so key. And Mike and I remember we were sitting there at Big Ten Media Day together a couple years ago, and Mike and I are kind of on the opposite ends of this one in terms of what can and can't happen. And I just told him today, we were talking back and forth, and I said, did any of us think 2 years ago that Washington, Oregon, UCLA, and USC would be on the Big Ten schedule in 2024?
Hmm.
I didn't.
No.
And here we are. So, or the SMU, Cal, and Stanford would be in the ACC. Certainly didn't have that on the bingo card.
No.
So there's a lot. I mean, nobody, if anybody said that 15 years ago, you would be like, what are you even talking about? And that's the fact that we are at that phase suggests that anything can happen. It's exactly what I was texting some of my friends over the weekend, that, and not to bring it back to the playoff part, but I had buddies saying they can't do that. They just can't. They can't. And I said, guys, they can do whatever they want, and they probably will. And there's nothing we can do about it.
Right. Also interesting in all this, that when they go to a 12-team playoff, a guy like Kyle McCord, in all likelihood, would not have gone into the transfer portal yet. But because there's only a 4-team playoff, he's in it. Cam Ward's in it. I mean, DJ's in it. Arch Manning says he's staying at Texas. I mean, your thoughts on the quarterbacks in this thing? Because it sounds like based on what I understand, McCord may visit or talk to Nebraska next.
Yeah, it's wild. It's another part of this thing that I have mixed feelings about. One, I'm never going to say no to a kid getting an opportunity to play, and this is the environment we live in where guys come and go in the portal. On the other end of it, you're like, there are seventh-year quarterbacks that have played at three different schools that when you look at their college football reference page, it looks like a pro football reference page with a journeyman NFL quarterback. And another debate we've been having is, and this got hot between some of the sporting news writers today, I said, I don't think a college quarterback is worth monetarily, and I know what they do for the university. I understand that. Yeah. I don't think they're worth like what Brock Purdy is to the Niners. Yeah. It's a dangerous precedent when you're paying a college kid more than the person who does it at the highest level, and you're paying them more money. And I know they may be more to Ohio State and Penn State and Alabama. I get that. But if you're paying a quarterback $3 million in college, why would he go to the NFL on a rookie contract where he could theoretically be making less money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, that's a really good point because I'll never forget when Bevel, who's been, you know, he was the offensive coordinator for Seattle and so forth. I'll never forget because of a Mormon mission, he was playing for Wisconsin and was 25 years old playing against Penn State. And Drew Bledsoe was 21 playing for the Patriots as the first overall pick. And you look today, you're going to tell me that a 23 to 26-year-old starting quarterback in the NFL, a multi-billion dollar enterprise, is less valuable than a 19-year-old at a university?
I can't see it. Now, and I was getting pushback because, yeah, they're like, yeah, that makes sense. There would be outliers, certainly, you know, like what Arch Manning brings into Texas versus and the example I used, and yes, it's a selfish, close-to-home example. I said, Jake Browning is making less than $1 million for the Bengals as a backup quarterback, and he may start in a playoff game. So you're telling me that Cameron Ward, who played 2 years at Washington State, should be making commanding or like basically asking for $1.5 to $2 million to play quarterback for 1 year at a college? That's where we're going to have some problems financially because I just – and I respect Mike's opinion and the others that I work with. Don't get me wrong. Because Mike had a good point. He did say, you know, Anthony Davis may have been worth $2 million at Kentucky for that one season. And Mike's right. So that's where I think – this is a hard one for me.
Because, you know, in fact, I saw Kentucky, you know, they played Penn State that year. And he and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and that whole group, his 1 year at Kentucky, gave John his national championship, John Calipari. And, you know, and at Ohio State, for 1 year, if Cam Ward makes that move from Washington State to Ohio State, everybody is assigned their own value based on what the entity believes the value happens to be. So somebody considers him to be of that value while Jake Browning is getting whatever value the Bengals think he should get.
It's strange days. And these are the big picture questions. And we've kind of covered the whole sport here in 15 minutes or so, but they're going to take a long time to figure out whether it's the next version of the playoff. What are we doing with NIL and the portal? How do we, look at the Big Ten and the SEC versus everyone else? Because I do, and I have friends. I was talking to a dad this week for one of my son's teams, and he just said, you know, at the end of the day, he's a big Buckeye fan. He said, at the end of the day, I almost prefer watching the NFL. And I told him, well, that's where this is headed in college football because you're going to enjoy the big games. Penn State fans enjoy the big games. Mm-hmm. But – you know, with the Big Ten changing and you're bouncing around, I just don't know what the appetite for Penn State at UCLA is, and I guess we'll find out next year.
Right. Exactly, we will. And long-term, in every sport. You talk about your son, and you mentioned him the last time you were on. How much fun is it for you as a father, and it can be nerve-wracking too, to see sports played at that level as opposed to the high stakes levels and the money we're talking about in both college and the pros. What's that like for you being around that when he's out there playing?
No, I mean, my son played junior high football, and my daughter plays all the sports too, and I help coach where I can, and, you know, it is still fun at its roots, right? Like, the junior high football at its roots was a lot of fun. Yeah. Last time I came on, we were driving back from his last game and listening to you call the Indiana radio game, and just to instill those things and the excitement. I think the appetite from that generation is still there. I would submit, though, like, one night I was talking to Grant, and I was telling him about, hey, man, when I was your age, it was, I'm trying to think exactly who won it when I was in seventh grade. I was like, you know, Florida was going to beat Nebraska, but they needed this team to win. And then there was almost a split national title. And he goes, well, why did they do that? And I was like, well, why did they do what they did last weekend? Sometimes we just don't know.
I mean, this is a sport that has inched its way along. I mean, Joe Paterno called for a playoff back in 1975, for goodness sakes. I mean, it just inches its way. I'll never forget Bill talking to Jim Delaney when they went to four. And I remember my initial comment to him was, Jim, I remember how hard it was for you to just get two. And he laughed.
And now we're going to 12. And as I put in my column last Sunday, I said, you know, if I know people and I know human nature, it's not going to be long till we add what we have now, 4, and add what we're getting, 12, and people are going to be calling for 16 before you know it.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have to ask you one last question, because Penn State's playing in the Peach Bowl against Lane Kiffin. How often have you been around Lane Kiffin, and what has been your thoughts if and when you've been around him?
So as much as he has this persona as this, you know, on social media, his persona on that is very different from what you get in person. He's kind of a quiet talker.
Yep.
Very different.
Yep.
Like, and he's done a really good job of rebuilding, you know, his persona in general. I mean, his coaching arc is unreal to think about. But I think what excites me about this game is these are two teams that both won 10 games, both lost the tough ones this year, both run the football and have a ton of talent. And I think for the winner of this game, you know, do bowl games still provide a springboard into the following season? That's debatable. But I think for these two programs, the answers can be yes, because I think it's a significant step for Ole Miss winning a New Year's Day 6 bowl, and a significant step for Penn State with all that talent that, after the Ohio State and Michigan losses, really turned it up when they got the, you know, unfortunately, when they got rid of Mike Yurcich, they started to turn it up on offense.
Yeah. Just very quickly, my sense on Lane has been he'll still be playful on Twitter, but in a lot of ways, a public persona, the maturity of him, both as a coach and a public persona, I think has been on display for a few years now.
Oh, for sure, and I look for that to continue. I mean, he's done a fantastic job at Ole Miss.
Thanks so much. Always enjoy every conversation we have. Tell DeCourcy I said hi, by the way. So
I will. I'll go start another argument with him when I get off the phone. Thanks so much, Steve. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bill. Bill Bender, Sporting News. Great as always. Always great to catch up with you. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.